newcomers who are pouring into those beautiful new homes every day are so anxious to know a few of the sidelights and the highlights of your early teaching years. So with your kind permission, let's take a little journey down memory's lane. First, of course, where and when did your fabulous teaching career begin? And can you recall how many were in that first class?
I taught in 1889 in Upton, and there were only 44 children in the class, four grades, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, can you recall the name of the principal in those days? The name of your principal?
No, we had three members on the school board. One was a woman, a former teacher, and she knew a lot.
Fine. Well, speaking of school boards, Annie, brings to my mind, did they have school committees back in those early days, like such as they do today, where they handle the many problems that come up and decide the policy of the schools and help teachers to get better wages?
No. They had a school board, but we never saw them. And they never helped the teachers to get any more money. I began at $10 a week.
And how long did it take before you acquired your first raise?
I can't remember. It was several years, and I got my first raise over in Westboro.
Oh, well, that speaks well for Westboro, doesn't it? Now, it being winter time, naturally, we're all concerned with how the schools are heated. And today, of course, children don't have to suffer in schools. But how was that school heated that you first taught in? You remember?
Had a big stove, and the janitor used to come in and keep it going. And
A coal stove, coal burning wood?
I don't know if it was coal or wood. I never even looked at it, but I was warm.
He did, yes. Now, I know you told me one time when I talked with you a long time ago that all your students were dear to you and you had wonderful memories of all your children. But out of all the years that you've taught, there must have been some who were a little more outstanding than others and some who have risen to positions of prominence and fame in the world. Can you give us a few little anecdotes about some, such as Admiral Denfeld, that perhaps would be interesting to people today?
I can't tell you anything about Admiral Denfeld. He was just an ordinary, very nice boy. But I did have a pupil in the 5th grade who was the son of the judge of the district court, and his father was Judge Trowbridge Forbes. He was William Merrifield Trowbridge Forbes. He was a sister of Esther Forbes, the authoress. But when he was in my school, he was a naughty little boy. Well, he wasn't naughty, but I kept him after school one night. I shouldn't tell this, but I'm going to. He stood beside me, waiting for further orders, and all of a sudden said to me, "Which would you prefer, a punch in the leg or a punch in the nose or a kick in the leg?" Well, he was talking to me just as he would have talked to his brother, Alan. They're both living in Worcester now. But I didn't tell him, what I preferred. I just took a little rattan about as long as a pencil, and I used it on his hand and gave him 5 strokes. Didn't hurt him, but it scared me, for I didn't know what he'd go home and tell his father and mother, who were my friend socially, but I never heard anything more from it, but he never was saucy again.
Oh, that is interesting. Tell me, did you retain your friendship with the father and mother?
Yes, I don't think they knew anything about it.
Oh. Now, I understand you to say that you did resort to punishment. Teachers were permitted to use their own judgment about the punishment exercised on misbehaving children in the early days. Did that apply for years? How long were teachers allowed to exercise their own discretion about punishment? Today, they don't do that so much as they did years ago. I believe children feel that they have their own rights, as they say, and they can always find someone to complain to. So you don't find that much now in school. Did that go on quite prevalently in those days?
I can't remember when it was changed to the present idea. But I do know that if I wanted to punish a child, I was not prohibited. I wasn't prohibited for many years. Only I was very careful when I did use a rattan, which was what we used in those days, to call the janitor to come up as a witness, and I would say to the boys, of course I never punished a girl, but I would say, I want to have Mr. Higgins here so he'll see that I don't abuse you.
Wonderful. Then you were well covered. Now, Annie, you know today that there's a great concern and a great sympathetic interest being taken in children who are handicapped and particularly mentally retarded, which is what they're classified as today. I believe, from what I understand on the television programs, there are 5.5 million mentally retarded people. Of course, they're not all children. But out of that number, there must be considerable that are younger. Now, nowadays, they have special classes in school for children. They're trying to more and more as the years go by. And President Johnson has tried to allocate vast sums for the help of these underprivileged and backward children. Now, do you remember back in your early days having children in your classes who might today be classified as mentally retarded? And if you do, how did you treat them and how did they get along with the other children?
I can remember only one now that was, I think, mentally retarded. And I know he wrote notes sometimes to the other children, and I did finally go to the judge and show them to him, and then he spoke to the boy. And later on, I think he went to some, I don't know whether it was an institution or what, but I can recall nobody else. But I do remember that before I finished teaching, Miss Hastings had a class of retarded children down in the Ford School, then the high school, and she did work with them. And we had some of the psychiatrists from the hospital who came down and gave the children examinations and taught them to find out if they needed to go there. And that's what was done with them. I never had anything.
Well, thank you. That's most interesting to have just one that you can recollect out of all those years would seem to indicate that it's the pressures and the worries of modern times that perhaps has created this particular problem. There may have been much more of a carefree attitude among children in those days. Now, this is getting away a little bit from your schooling. profession, but what memories do you have of Westboro's historic tornado? Where were you at the time? What were you doing? Were you teaching then? You were retired then, weren't you? So that was 9 years ago. 53, yes. Can you remember any particular incidents that day?
I simply remember that there was a thunder shower, which I hate, and there was a great deal of wind, and it seemed I was at home in my house, and the wind seemed to be blowing horizontally up the street, and then we found that the Aronson place had been destroyed, and that the people, two or three people, had been killed there.
Did you know those people personally?
Well, I knew the girl. Yes, I knew them all. Mr. and Mrs. Aronson and daughter. And I remember going afterward, the sky was blue and everything was beautiful after it. And we walked up the street to see, but they wouldn't let us go up to the house because it was so bad.
Yes, I've been requested to ask another question that's a little different from your teaching years. Could you please give us some information about the work and the evolution of the Westboro Council of Churches? Do they have more cooperation today than they did before? Do you remember?
It was started when Mr. Douglas Haywood of your church was here. And I think that the people were quite enthusiastic and interested, and I think that they did quite a bit in those days. But it's changed and grown a great deal since then. All I do is to write cards and send them out. But it's very interesting to go.
Now, this also was a little off. Fine, thank you. Yes, it is very active today, and a lot of women that you know and I know regularly attend meetings and are very faithful to it, and I think it will be a big asset as the years go by to Westboro religious life. Now, this is another question that is a little offbeat about your background. I remember that you were secretary for a while to the Westboro Republican Town Committee. I have a little book in my possession because I was secretary too for a while, and the book was passed on to me, and your notes are in it. I think it was when it first started up, or else was reactivated, but a few years ago. And tell me, what do you feel is the position of the Republican Party today, and do you think there is hope for it for the future? What are your thoughts on this, Annie?
From what I read in the paper, I don't know. I just, one minute I think there's some hope for it, and the next I think there isn't. But it was a very interesting sort of work, and I enjoyed what I did with it. And there were a great many people there that I met that were worth knowing. But we used to have some very good meetings.
Yes, I think so too. I enjoyed them. But you definitely feel there should always be a two-party system in this country. Yes, to keep it free. Yes. Now, your home on West Main Street is beautiful, Annie. Could you please tell us about the old deeds to it and the background story of that location?
That was owned by the family named Burnett. Miss Sarah Burnett was the organist at the Congregational Church for years and a music teacher. And it was always in the Burnett family. And I think that, I can't remember, but in 1906, I went there to live and have lived there ever since.
You don't remember the year. You don't remember the year it was first built and occupied. Now, here's another question. These are very varied and informal questions, as you can understand, some of them not even related to each other, but we are anxious to get your thoughts down for perpetuity. Now, your interest in music has been most extensive over the years, and we of the Westboro Women's Club still remember your faithfulness and your loyalty in playing the piano every month for the meetings, and we miss you terribly. Now, can you tell us something about your singing career?
I began to take lessons in vocal music when I was quite young, and used to sing a great deal. And in, I can't remember the year, but it was in the last century, I went to the Baptist church and sang in the choir there for nearly 20 years. And off and on, I played the organ when the organist wasn't there. But music has been one of my greatest interests outside of my work as a teacher all of the years.
Fine. I'm sure that your interest in music has been an inspiration to your pupils as well as your academic ability. Now, to get back to your singing career and your musical talent, who did you take lessons from? Can you remember who your teachers were back in your childhood days? Did you practice faithfully, Annie Fales?
I guess so. I like to. My first teacher was a woman, vocal teacher, in Westboro by the name of Ada Goddard, and she's been dead for a good many years. I did go into Boston and take lessons with a man in there for a short time, but the rest of my teachers, my studies, both of them, nothing else, really, and very few piano lessons.
How did you get into Boston in those days?
Oh, you had trains. We had a railroad. Did you ever hear of such a thing?
I said the tracks are still there, yes. Now, getting back to transportation, I understand that your method of reaching school back in the early days was a little different than the teachers of today are using. Can you tell us how you got to school?
Well, when I taught in Upton, I was fortunate enough to live with an uncle who had a man who drove his horses, and he had horses and carriages. So I drove over there every Monday morning, came home every Friday night, and spent the weekend at home. So I was very fortunate.
You were. Where was your home in those days? You say you spent your weekends at home. Where did your mother and father live?
Well, my father was not living. He died when I was very young. But my mother and brother and I lived with this aunt and uncle on High Street, just this side of the Holman's home. I think the place is now owned by some people by the name of Crump. I went to live there when the house was built, and I went there when I graduated from high school. And then early in the 1900s, moved away where I am now.
You moved to West Main Street, you mean? Now, can you tell us a little of the reactions that you felt? And you must have felt reactions because it was a most unusual honor. What were your reactions to the naming of a school for you?
You know, Alvin Hulbert came and told me that the school was to be named for me. And it was just after I'd had a birthday way up in the 90s, and I didn't like it. I said, people will be sick of reading about me and hearing about it. So I didn't like it so well at first. Later on, when I found how nice it was and how well the people seemed to be pleased, I was very happy.
That's wonderful. Now tell me, did you go up to Eli Whitney Street and watch the construction of the school? Did your curiosity become aroused as time went on? And did you go to the dedication ceremony?
I went every time I got a chance up to watch it as it was being built. I went to the dedication exercises too. That open house, and it was all sat up on the platform with the faculty and the school board.
I like the flowers. You had a beautiful bouquet.
Oh, indeed. I have had more beautiful bouquets since then, and at that time, I can't tell you all about them. It has so many. That was...
I remember when they had open house at that school for the townspeople to come and say yes, that was for the dedication ceremony. And you were there with this beautiful orchid corsage on, and you looked just like a queen. You really did. And I know that everybody is going to be pleased to hear your comments of your reactions to the naming of a school after you. Now, can you tell us of the tradition of the New Year's open house, which of course now is held at Admiral and Mrs. Denzel's home every year? What was a little of the story behind that?
Miss Maud Gilmore, a teacher, and Mrs. William Buxton and I were on a committee in the round table at one time for New Year's. And one of them suggested that we have an open house, which was new. That was way back, I can't remember the year, many years ago. And so we had an open house at my house, and we had a very delightful time. The members just invited a few friends, but it's been continued ever since. And that was the beginning of it.
I've always been curious as to who started the round table. And you always think of, when you hear the expression round table, or the Knights of the Round Table, but how was that name chosen for your club, and why, and what did you do when it was first founded? Were you literary giants, or were you intellectual giants? What were the requirements for membership?
I was not a charter member, so I can't tell you that, but I can tell you that Admiral Denzel's father and mother, who were living there on Faith Street at that time, started it. It began, and then several years later, I was asked to join it, to become a member. And I cannot tell you exactly the reasons why they named it so, but it was a literary and intellectual and social affair.
And it was an honor to belong to it and to be asked to belong to it. Just as I consider it an honor today to be invited to the Denzel's house for their open house party. It's still a wonderful time. And you were there at the last one to celebrate their anniversary, the 75th anniversary, was it? Yes, and your picture was in the paper, and it really made it... Now, we're jumping around again. Back to school days. Will you tell me what type of recreation was enjoyed in the old-time public schools? And for the pupils, not the teachers.
Teachers in the heavens. Well... The recreation, they went out in the yard and played games. And some of them were supervised after a while, and we teachers went out and looked after them. I can't remember now, but
It was a ball
of well, some kind? Well, yes, and these races.
Singing games? Did they
have
songs?
We had, not out of doors and recess, but whenever we had a rainy day and we couldn't go out into the yard to play, I used to play the piano and they'd play games right in the room and we had fun that way.
Tell me, what were the school hours in those days? Longer than they are today?
When I went to high school, I went at 9 o'clock from 9 to 12 and from 1 to 4. And then later, I think that the shortened time.
Now, something else I want to recall to your memory is that fabulous party that was thrown for you in Town Hall, where you received the miniature piano that was created especially for you, and it was filled with what, Annie?
That was at our church parish house, and it was filled with over $200.
Were they in coins? Was it in coins or bills?
Bills.
I have been asked to quiz you about Kirkside, which is being kept up so beautifully by the Congregational Church these days. How did that first come about? And what caused its dissolution as a home for the elderly? Do you know why that happened?
Mrs. Frank Forbes was the one who started it. And it was intended for elderly people. And the reason that it has changed is because the state required so many things that couldn't be cared for there. I'd be there now if it were only existing as it was in the beginning. But it was Mrs. Frank Forbes that did it, one of our greatest people in Westboro.
Yes, the Forbes family has always loved Westboro, and we have so many landmarks that are the result of their generosity to the townspeople. But who lived in, whose home was that? Was that Mrs. Forbes' personal home?
It was built, oh no. She came from Chicago, and the Forbeses lived up on High Street, right across the street from where I did. But the place was built for them as Kirkside.
Can you tell us a little about the history of your very own Unitarian Church, which we know you all love so much? And also a little about the early ministry.
Well, I went to church from the time I was old enough to. After I had been, at first I tried out the Methodist Church, and later the Congregational Church, but I simply went with friends then. My mother was unable to go at that time, but when she was, we went to the Unitarian Church, and I've been there ever since. I can't remember much about the early ministers, except for Mr. John Forbes, who later was in Taunton in New York, and he lived in Westboro, and then there were others later on, but I don't remember so much. You see, I was down at the Baptist Church through the church service, and I lost a good deal, but I came back after the service and taught a Sunday school class there.
What were you down at the Baptist Church for?
I sang in the choir for 20 years.
Now, you have been an integral part of the Unitarian Church for many years. What have been some of the positions that you have held?
I can't remember that I did very much except to be a Sunday school teacher. And all the years I did a few other things. I played the organ when they needed me. I sang in the choir down then when they needed somebody. But I did have charge of the junior choir 2 different times, and that was a great deal of pleasure.
I'm sure it was, and I'm sure those juniors learned a lot from you and have benefited from your inspiration.